Blog Talk Radio.
This land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave and ancient land to me.
Support for this podcast and the following messages comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, proud to support the many Texas businesses who make safety their number one priority in the workplace. More information about safety-focused workers' comp available at WorkSafeTexas.com.
Morning sun reveals her hills and plains. Then I see a land where children can run free. So take my hand and walk this land with me, and walk this lovely land with me. When you are by my side, with the help of God, I know I can be strong.
Well, good evening and welcome to Yada Yada Radio. I'm Craig and I'm here with Kirk and JB. Good evening, fellas.
Good evening.
How's it going?
Yeah, well, I've had better days and better weeks, I'll tell you that for sure. Those who have listened to the archives of shows know that I'm in the midst of separation and getting a divorce, and there are times where that is an extremely painful experience. And so my day started off with a real challenging discussion that I guess truth is no longer a viable commodity in my world. So that's frustrating, and I have spent 4 days of 16-hour days trying to move out of my granddaughter house, the house that we had bought for to celebrate our lives with our granddaughter, and into a tiny apartment because I gave my ex the rights to sell our grandparent house, and trying to move out of one and into another alone with years of accumulated stuff. I think I threw away two entire truckloads, not an exaggeration, two entire truckloads of my past as I prepared for this move. And half of what I had went into storage, the other half went into this tiny apartment. But I am right down to Florida now, trying to get away from it all and kind of establish a new life. I will have an office here hopefully soon, probably the first week of September. I can get back to studying and writing, and I look forward to doing that, and I'll get back to responding to emails, something I've been derelict in doing for some time. Please don't be upset with me for going through this period and not being able to, excuse me, to do that, but it has been a real challenge. And then on top of that, as you can hear me hack here, I got a really, really nasty sinus infection that gave me a very, very sore throat. It's beginning to recover, but now I'm into that cough mode and hoarse mode. So sometime today, this evening, I'm sure my voice will give out, which is why I'm gonna be good for an hour this evening and not much beyond that. And I'm telling you this not for any sympathy. We all go through good and bad times in life. I share it only so that those of you who are accustomed to me emailing responses expeditiously understand that that's why I'm not doing it. It has nothing to do with the individual. Just not in a place where I can devote the time to it at this point, and why I haven't finished any new chapter in a while. So it's just a heads up so that you know where I'm at, and that I'm now broadcasting via a cell phone from a hotel room as a park from, you know, having that whole studio and world draped around me. So it's a much bigger challenge. That's my Moshe moment of trying to explain why you know, have somebody on the shoulder. If you've got an errand out there, by all means, I'll take a step back here for a while. What I want to do to begin is to talk about the letters that comprise the word Torah. I don't think there is a word in Hebrew more misunderstood or more important to understand. Speaking of words, though, by the way, there is one little celebration. My hope is I just love the water, and I love warmth. And so to reboot my life, I'm moving to South Florida, probably in the Fort Lauderdale area. And I'm buying a boat that I'm going to live aboard. It's actually cheaper than buying a house here in terms of being on the water. And I have chosen a name for my new floating residence. And that name is based upon a Hebrew verb. Maybe my favorite Hebrew verb. No one will know what it means unless I explain it to them, except for those of you who are listening to this program and who have read the books. But the boat's name is going to be Kara, a welcoming invitation.
Nice. Good choice.
So that'll be the name of my new home here in Fort Lauderdale, Kara. Well, speaking of the place where I learned the word Kara, Torah, and by the way, one of the things I'm really searching for is I would love to find a companion that they could enjoy conversation with, that his topics, coming to know Yahweh, his testimony, his vocabulary, his actual nature, his invitations, his family, would be interesting to. You know, I was married for 34 years and we never had a single conversation about it. You know, my ex never read a single word of any book I had written or ever listened to. A single minute of any of the programs that I've ever done. And, you know, to have something that's that important in your life, and you guys are both uniquely blessed, and at Kirk, you have Terry and JB, you have Patty, and you both, in the case of husband and wife, came to Yahweh in the covenant at very close proximity to one another, if not simultaneously. And the reinforcement of that is extraordinary. And now we're not all in that situation, but some have developed extended family, like our dear friend Jackie has extended family, sons and daughters and in-laws that have come to know Yahweh and become part of the covenant. And there is a tremendous sense of satisfaction, of life with purpose and meaning. The ability to talk about the single most important things in our lives with somebody who you care about and are spending time with is the ultimate joy that I seek. So, you know, I get to do this with you all on Friday evenings, but, you know, I would love to share the same joy that you guys both have in having meaningful Torah discussions, Beirut discussions, Yahweh discussions, as part of my everyday life. So that's one of the reasons that I'm spending time seeking the opportunity to be with someone that I can share these things with.
Mm-hmm.
All right, that's enough. Yeah. Too much on me. Let's look at the four letters of Torah. Kirk, why don't you start it off? You are our letter maven. What about the first letter in Torah? And what does it tell us?
Well, the first one is a Tau. And there's actually two T's in Hebrew. There's also a Tet in it. That is a Tau that's actually turned sideways. Sometimes it has a circle around it. But this one is an upright pole. The interesting thing about letters, if somebody is new, is that they have meanings. An A in English is just an A, and a T is just a T. It's a phonetic sound, whereas these are actually symbols and mean things so that you, if you were even illiterate or if you were a slave coming out of Egypt, you could at least look at the letters and derive some meaning out of those with just a little bit of help you could, or just looking at it, you can see that certain things are, look like people or certain things look like an upright pole. In this particular case, the tall is exactly that. It's an upright pole. Some of the meanings I wrote down, some of the meanings on this.
Just on a pause here, just one second.
Sure.
What you just said is absolutely, I don't determine what, is exceedingly important. Now, we talk about why Hebrew, why Yahweh chose this language a lot. You know, the fact that verbs in Hebrew exist in all time. They aren't stuck in the past, present, or future. And how powerful that is, particularly when compared to light, as Yahweh compares himself to light, and how light's time simply exists. And we talk about the stems being relational, and we talk about the moods being volitional. And there are just so many aspects of this language that are extraordinarily revealing and perfectly suited for the purpose that Yahweh chose Hebrew. But prime among them, especially for a man who is artistic, is the fact that they are graphic. These letters all paint pictures. Yahweh is a superb communicator. And a lot of times I'm accused of being pedantic because I'm just so into the details. Well, it's the details that help us understand the picture that he's painted. And the more we examine it, the better we understand the details, the clearer our perspective is. It's like going from the fuzzy old black and white televisions when they first came out with them, where they just like were snowy, to this new super high definition. And that's the way that Yahweh communicates. It's super high definition. And these letters, being graphic by nature, just talk about the two shapes. The M has been the symbol, because Yahweh started it, of signature. You know, put your X there. The X marks the spot where you should sign on any document. Well, the letter is specifically says signature. But it's a signature inside of a circle. Which means this is where I am. If you want to be part of where I am, you've got to go from where you are to the place where I've signed this document. I want to encircle you. I want to enclose you in my set apart spirit and in my family and my home. And then the other, and by the way, these two letters are probably indistinguishable in Paleo-Hebrew. You know, in Babylonian Hebrew, you got two letters for T, pronounced exactly the same way. I think if you go back in time, that these letters are pretty much indistinguishable. And you see, any word that is written with one version or the other has the same meaning. And you see them presented both ways. So that the likelihood is that Yahweh is trying to communicate both aspects, because the second aspect is Passover. That's what the upright pole is. And it's not just an upright pole, it's an upright pole with a lintel on the top of it. The doorway to life. And so you've got this upright pillar of the tabernacle and the upright pillar and lintel of Pesach combined with this is my signature. You can trust what is being said here because I've signed my name to it. Now, that's just before you even get to, well, what do these things mean? But
well, it means all that stuff, too. I mean, you can also use one that's circled, as a basket. It's something that you protect stuff in. You store your valuables in ancient
right.
worlds. As you were talking, I was
also,
saying, well,
baskets were used for what? When the people took the baskets into the field, when they went into the field and they took baskets, what were they doing?
Well, they were gathering up things in the field. Like
harvesting, right.
Harvesting.
Yeah. Yeah, the basket was always used to harvest. And the basket particularly used to harvest once you ground the chaff and the away from the kernel and barley or any grain. The basket was used to never to carry away the chaff. That blew away with the wind. Carry away. The valuable part of the grain. And the valuable part of the grain is always Yahweh's metaphor for souls that are part of his family.
Well, yes, and you know, that would be, well, I was going to say somebody might be too much of a stretch, but I'll get to that in a second or well, before we finish this thing. But obviously, it is the tower is a signpost. It represents the lintel on the doorway. It's a frame.
Mm-hmm.
As we just mentioned, it can be a mark, certainly in the when you use it as a set. It is a signature, which you...
By the way, just emphasize the signpost. You know, signpost, that is Zion.
Well, yes, I was thinking of that. Zion is a signpost along the way, so it's a marker,
right.
Or a marker and a target to go to, as, and that's why we use a lot of Zane sometimes, which is a plow. They would find a marker to drive a straight line or go to those markers,
mm-hmm.
so they keep their fields or their grooves in their fields, their plows going in a straight order. So all of those are encompassed in that, which is really odd when you think about it's a letter, for goodness sake. We never thought about those kind of things other than a phonetic sound. And the Torah is probably the only book where you don't ever need an illustrator. It's got all. It's written correctly.
It's already
there. There's no room. There's no room for. I'd be out of work, man.
Yeah.
So it's terrific in that sense. So you've got all those meanings, and I agree with you there because as I was going through this last night, I was thinking about this is. This is just my opinion, and nobody has to agree with it, and I can be totally wrong, but I went to kind of an interesting interpretation of this, and that perhaps these four letters also can represent the four feast, or the four feast and the spring. You've got the upright pole in this case, and as you say, it could be a Passover. It can also represent maybe the basket. I don't know, but he went from there to matzah, so he was
yeah.
Feast. So, I mean, I know that's a bit of a stretch, but I was just thinking that as we're talking, that possibly you can do that. But regardless of whether it was or not, there is a signpost. And Yahweh told Moshe, as I was just sitting here thinking, I remember he told Moshe, I'm going to send you a person like you, but he also is a sign. And that first feast, Pesach and Matzah, is a sign. Then you move to the second letter, which is a wah. Now, a wah,
yeah.
Of course.
Before we turn to the wah, can I just share with you that if you look at one of my favorite statements, is Yahweh's statement in Jeremiah 31, where he talks about how he's going to renew the family oriented covenant relationship. And he's going to renew it with Israel and with Yahudah. Mm-hmm. And he says it's not going to be exactly the same as it was with Abraham. There's going to be a difference.
Sure.
And then he says the difference is that he's going to scribe the Torah, which would be these letters,
mm-hmm.
in our hearts, and he's going to write his name on us. And so this text represents him writing his name on us, and the upright pillar and the lintel describes this the concept of being part of his family and of him doing precisely what he's promised in terms of his Torah. And so I even see it in that extraordinary promise of, yes, I'm going to renew my covenant. I'm going to reestablish it. And it's going to be with Yisrael and with Yahudah as I originally promised. And this is how I'm going to do it. And I think these letters actually describe and depict how he's going to do that, and how he explains it in Jeremiah 31.
Well, you know,
a wholesale integration of the Torah.
Well, also, you know, when we say an upright pillar, I'm always saying you're thinking Edon, an upright, my upright one, and that's true too. But there's in a more ancient meaning, that pillar, I mean, that upright pole would represent the thing, this big support of the tent. Even from the inside, because it is the framework and everything is hanging from there. So, and then when they would take the tent down, you realize that it was carved as a pointed part at the bottom, so it was sticking to the ground to do that. But then it becomes a weapon to protect the household. Now they have a weapon to protect the household, and the head of the house would wield that if they had to protect them from anyone attacking the family home. So, boy, it encompasses a lot, you know, for just a lesson when you think about it.
Yes.
And then from there, it transitions, of course, to a wall, and that's pertinent when you start thinking
before
about it.
Before we move on,
Kent, I'm sorry.
Something I was just thinking about in regard to the taw, you know, as symbolizing the doorway, I think, man, maybe I'm out on 11 just reaching a little too far, but it being the last letter of the alphabet, I find interesting in that, you know, people are often want to, you know, literally rush to the doorway. You know, they don't want to spend the time to study. They don't want to, you know, they want to jump right into, you know, and understandably, you want to jump right into it. But, you know, the idea that the doorway is at the end, you know, you have to work through all this before you really pass through the doorway. You know, celebrating Passover in and of itself, you know, doesn't get you through the doorway. You have to do the work leading up to it, coming to understand it, know it, and embrace it before mm-hmm. you can even enter the doorway. So, like I said, maybe I'm out on a limb, but I think it's mm-hmm. interesting that it is the last letter.
Well, it's almost like last chance symbol.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, but, yeah. Well,
so then you move to the wall. Law, and the law is to be increased, to be added to be secured. The Ten Pegs.
Yes. The tenth packet enlarges the family home and enlarges the family, if you would, as well. This is the extension of the tenth. And if you think about it also, the next feast after Pesach and Matzah, of course, is Bikurim. And Bikurim is adoption. That's when, of course, that was, that's not symbolic. You've increased the family. And you increase the number of members in the family home. So the law is, and that's why they use it as an and, this and that. It's an add-on, an addition to, but in this particular case, the family and the family home. And, of course, as you were talking earlier, and the law happens to be one of the letters in Yahweh's name. And so from there, we go from the Torah to the law. And now we go to the last two letters, and just my purpose.
Before we leave the law, I want to share just something else that strikes me. You know, I've always wondered, why the law in Yahweh's name? You know, I understand the hand reaching, with the upper arm reaching down and out to us with the open hand. We know that's the beginning of Yahweh's name. It's so perfect for a father reaching up and down to his children. And the two people standing up and reaching up to him, being observant, the two hays represent clearly husband and wife that are part of a family and how important family is to Yahweh. I mean, I think that they specifically represent Abraham and Sarah. But it is all of us that are represented and mother and father that come together to raise our children to be part of a covenant that are represented by those two people standing up and reaching up to God. And that's that's the whole purpose of Yahweh reaching down to us. He is reaching down and out mm-hmm. to those of us who are observant, who are reaching up to him. But then what you have is the letter in between is the wall, is that now you speak of bringing two people together. You know, that whole story of they come together as one. And together as one, they conceive new life and create a family and raise children and provide for a home. And when men and women come together in this way, the law bringing them together, then we mirror the covenant. So by having hey, wah, hey, in Yahweh's name, you see the covenant literally manifest before our eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Men and women coming together to become a husband and wife, to becoming mother and father, to bonding in such a way that they not only conceive children, but rear those children in a secure home where they are loving and encouraging them. In other words, modeling the very covenant that Yahweh is envisioning with us. And that's why I think you see those three letters in Yahweh's name following the hand that is reaching down and out to us.
Well, I thought J.B.'s story he told a couple months ago, the one when he was looking down at to his child, he and his wife, and she's reaching up and they're reaching down, and it looks like a two hays and a wah. I mean, that was really sweet.
Mm-hmm.
That was a picture there. So, Then you, if you move on to the next page, before you place over, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm just saying, there is no, I'm reading in the chat room and it says that there's a Blog Talk Radio problem this evening and there's no sound in the chat room. And so the answer to that is the call-in number that's 563-999-3021. There is another guest call-in number, which is 347-326-9553. So there's another listener number, 347-326-9553. If you wouldn't mind, JB, if you could also type that number into the forum, since the people that I'm talking to now obviously can't hear unless they're already on the phone, but give them that number as well in the forum that we'll make it go the best we can. Yeah, the next letter is a Roche. Roche is interesting, and it's one of 10 letters of the 22 letters in Hebrew that is directional. And this is something, Kirk, you were the first to discover. And I think this is actually something very profound. One of your most enlightening discoveries was that with the 10 letters that are directional, the Aleph, for example, the is directional. It faces to the left. The Beit, which is the family home, has an entrance only on the left side. The Lamed, excuse me, the Gimel, the foot, is as we would look at it, facing and therefore walking to the right. The Zain, the TS sound, is a plow. The plow has a direction. It's moving to the left. Yahweh's hand, which is reaching down and out to us, is definitely directional, and it's reaching from right to left. The Nun, which is the child that is born, the sperm, is diagonal from right to left. The Shin, which is that thorn, describing words that separate, is directional, moving from right to left. And the person, the last one, which is this Rosh, is a person whose back is to the right, who is facing to the left. There are 10 directional letters in Hebrew, 12 non-directional letters. For example, the Tef is vertical, the Hays are vertical. The
Waffle
is, they're just go left and right. And so they're not leaning in any direction. So what you found, Kirk, is we were trying to decide how a word gets a negative connotation or positive connotation, whether or not that directional letter was looking toward or away from one of the letters in Yahweh's name. So if it was looking to a letter in Yahweh's name, the word was most obvious, was most typically a very positive in its connotation. And if it was looking away from one of the letters in Yahweh's name, it had a negative connotation.
Yeah, it was about 98% accurate as far as I could tell. And some of them have a little
bit of both. And probably where it wasn't accurate is just the corruption of the language over time.
I find that more and more and more. If you dig deeper, you start going. You start cussing in the middle of the night. Going, why can't you people get this right?
Right. So in this particular case, the Rosh is between two letters in Yahweh's name. It is between the wall that's securing additional tent peg and the back to it, and facing the Hay, which is the only letter that's repeated twice in Yahweh's name. So it is facing the letter that is repeated twice in Yahweh's name, which is the observant individual. And in this particular case, in Torah, I think the fact that it is facing the observant individual helps define the very nature and purpose of the Rosh, which is to use your eyes and your ears and your brain, which is what it depicts as the profile of an individual, looking from right to left, looking at the Hay, which is the observant individual that's reaching to God. Its direction in this case helps to define the term, because we constantly say in the positive connotation, it is the observant and thinking individual. It is Shamar on steroids. It is Shamar as observant, closely examining and carefully considering this juxtaposition in this extraordinarily important word, Torah, facing the observant individual, looking up, reaching up, standing up to Yahweh, is what that individual is contemplating and observing, and therefore paying attention to the two letters during Yahweh's name. And with the back of the head protected by, if you will, that's securing Tenpeg.
Mm-hmm.
Its very location in the word is powerful.
Well, I wanted to just add to that, that you know, that it's also, you know, as you described, it's the top of the first, the beginning, and the best, but it's also the first fruits. And that connotation,
yes,
that brings us right over to Makurim and as well as being enlightened. And so it's a wonderful transition. I keep looking at the two things. It's like an almost an evolution of where we start once we get on the path. We're constantly looking and studying and learning. So it's all cerebral at first, and you're trying to put all the connect all the dots and get your head clear and get rid of all the stuff you've been taught all your life and get to the truth and the heart of the matter. And then all of a sudden, now we from there, once you get it, and once you go through the Moed Mikros and you're empowered, you've been enlightened. That's the enlightened part to me, I think, in the Rosh. And then when you get to the hey, that's your empowerment, because now you can actually do something with it. You can share it. You can walk the path. You can engage with Yahweh. So it's a phenomenal word. It is a feminine word, by the way, too. We forgot to say that. But
yes, it is. Yes. It's got the hand in, which makes it a feminine word,
yeah,
like Yahweh's name, for example, is
yeah,
feminine. Like the Bayrith of that covenant is feminine. There's so many important words that are feminine, and this is one of them.
Yeah. So I forget exactly where you did that study on the henna, but that was, if you can remember where to send them, that would be a great thing for somebody to read. I forget exactly where it was, but it was like 3 or 4 pages on hay one time. I remember we were talking on...
It was an entire chapter on henna. We saw henna in an important place as it relates to the covenant, and then devoted an entire chapter to every time that it's used in the opening of the Torah. So we walked all the way through its use in the Torah. And henna means to look up, to pay attention, to be observant, and concentrate on what is being presented. So yeah, it's all there. In fact, Rosh is actually the first letter of the first word in the Torah. You know, it's Ma Rishit, but Ma just means in. And then Rishit is with the Ra, is the beginning, the first fruit. It's what's the greatest priority? No, first family.
Of course, you know, you've got that when you said the Rosh is between the Wa and the Hay. And the other place it is, to emphasize it once again, is Yara, which is also is to teach, which is I learned the Torah so I could remember it. I used to say it's good, ITGD, you know, for instruction, teaching, guidance, and direction. So I would get that horrible law thing out of my brain, you know, like I was trying to get rid of Lord, you know, as a southerner, as far as everything, oh Lord this and oh Lord that, you know, and he's trying to teach myself to identify with it. So, but all those things apply. It's instruction, but mostly it's teaching. And I tell you, you can't look through 7 or 8 lexicons and not come up with teaching. Then you have to really stretch to get you into things like the law and then to the
And then look at the last letter is the hay. And the hay depicts a person standing up, looking up, and reaching up.
Not bowing.
Right. It shows that God wants us on our feet, our hands in his, so that we can walk with him, not bowing down. He doesn't want our hands clasped in prayer before him. Now, the person is paying attention and attempting to benefit from what Yahweh is offering, which is that outstretched hand.
I think that's a great word.
Our relationship. Yes. And how in the world religious Jews and Christians corrupted this word so that they convey that it's a law is just mind-boggling.
Mind-boggling.
It's a word that's described, based on the verb yala, or yara, yala, introduces it by telling us that it's based on the verb yara, which means source from which teaching, direction, and guidance flow. And it's so clearly about teaching and directing and guiding and instructing that to corrupt that to law is one of the most egregious crimes ever committed. I'd say that's second only to changing Yahweh's name to the title Lord. It would be the single most egregious thing that has been done by religious men. Corrupting teaching and guidance to law is the second. I think someone, Kirk, wrote you and wanted to, you know, just to have an understanding as to why I made a translation and Yeshaya Isaiah 8:10 as to why I had obedience in the definition when there is no word in Hebrew for obey. I mean, just because we're talking about Torah meaning teaching and guidance and not law. Let me just share that with you and why I wrote it the way I did. I, you know, now looking at it, I would do it differently, so I'm not claiming to be right here, but let me tell you what I was trying to convey. It says, choose to listen and respond to. This is wa hazan. Elect to hear and to heed. Choosing to give ear while pondering and considering, harking and being observant, obedience to. And then the next word is any cold, distant lands, faraway countries. Arming yourself while preparing for your defense, Azar. Choosing to gird yourself for war, electing to strengthen your army while binding others as part of your military preparation, the Hittite imperative. By choosing to establish and equip a military to defend yourself, you will have chosen to be by yourself, is what that means. And by the way, Hazan was written in the Hittite imperative active, which means that the individual is choosing to be influenced by what their country, the reason, and then it says, and you will have chosen your own fate, which is to be terrorized and bewildered, shattered, abolished, even cast down in fear. Wah, chadah. And you will have elected to be confused, discouraged, broken, and destroyed, choosing of your own volition to be dismayed and frightened, living in a state of anxiety, paranoia, astonishment, and ruin, having failed to do something, having failed by doing something dreadful. Called imperative. Now, the primary definition was choose to listen and respond, arming yourself for war while preparing for your defense. But that sounds like the Trumpites today. America's never had a stronger military. You know, under he just passed that new budget. He says that the most powerful and best military in American history. When you outspend the rest of the world combined in spying and in your war preparations, then you are listening to it. You're saluting the flag and the national anthem and pledge of allegiance and all that sort of thing, and you're patriotic pro-military. And you are choosing to listen to and respond, even being submissive to, if you will, your government. And if you do that, and you have this patriotism and this commitment to believing and letting your government influence you in this way so that you become supportive of these things, then the consequence for you is dismal, is what this is saying. Choose to devise your scheme based upon the revolting advice and counsel of others, but it will be nullified because you have chosen to be in violation of the covenant. So this, Hebrew poetry, one thing, reemphasizes and confirms the previous statements just said from a different perspective. So if you look at the next statement, choose to devise your schemes, plan your course of action in consideration with your own inclination based upon the revolting advice and counsel of others, but it will be nullified because you've chosen to be in violation of the covenant. So in that context, then that is what it is inferring. It's inferring a submissiveness because of the Hiphil stem to one's government. That doesn't mean that Hebrew has a word for obey. It doesn't. But that's the implication if you will, of the stem in this particular case.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, but if you go there, you will wind up being obedient to them. So that's the way I took
yeah,
it.
Yeah, right.
When you say so,
yeah.
I mean, that's the context of what you were saying, of what Yahweh was saying about that.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, and listen, I'm not a perfect communicator. I have a Moshe syndrome as well, and so you know, it's is there a better word than obedience there to government as an implication of the Hiphol stem on this can't listen to your you know the testimony of faraway lands of you know your country like this the testimony and the patriotism and. And politics of America, and you're going to be negatively influenced by it is the implication of the Hiphol stem. So it's not just that you're listening to it, but that you're being affected by it. So you're going along with it. And so that implies a degree of submissiveness, if you will. It's the Pauline submit to your government, you know, because Paul wrote in Galatians that all governments were established by God and they're. They don't pull out the sword for bad, but for good. And you know, it's the antithesis of Yahweh's testimony. Well, here he is explaining that if you follow Romans, I think it's 13, where Paul is expounding upon this, that'll be the consequence. I think I mentioned Galatians, it's Romans 13, where he has that whole diatribe, and Yahweh is saying, this is where it's going to take you. It's where he explained in Shamuel that...
Yeah, I don't have a king.
Human rulers, human governments, are going to lead you astray. They're going to take your sons. They're going to take your money. They're going to take your productivity. They're going to influence the women in your life. They're going to do nothing but harm. And so that's what he's conveying.
I know. Go ahead. No, I was just going to say, I know I asked you this once a long time ago, but what happened in the generation when I was in my 20s and they were actually marching in the streets and burning flags, and now they'll vote their future away to support an army to fight wars that we don't even need?
It's pretty interesting. I've pondered this, and we've talked about it on this program before, how there was a profound change in America. And that profound change is that the left used to be anti-military, anti-patriotism, and the right used to be pro-patriotism, pro-military, and that was the number one place where they clashed. And the left always wanted less government, the left military spending, and the right wanted more military spending. It was the great dividing line between left and right. It was the great dividing line of the Vietnam War. And yet what's happened in the last 30 to 40 years, is that in terms of patriotism and in terms of large military, now the left and the right see things exactly the same. And my thinking is...
You can't question the military.
Right, is that military is the ultimate means to control. Yeah, I was right. Military is the means to control. You can't rebel against anything your country demands of you because, well... They've got all the power.
And the military.
Yeah.
Right.
Then the brown shirts show up. That's what it's in Europe.
Right. It's the means that the government has to enforce its will, to impose its will, is the military. And really, in America, there's no other purpose of it. There is no country on earth that is going to invade or could invade America. Like we've just, some nincompoop in the U.S. military just said that, well, you know, we think that China may be planning bombing runs of America, and therefore we need to be diligent. Oh, come on. China is not going to bomb America. There is zero possibility of that. What would be the purpose of it? They own more T-bills than any other nation. It would destroy their value. America is by far their largest market. They own a disproportionate amount of American companies and land.
And you think China's going to attack America?
You're an idiot. You're just an absolute idiot. You're not thinking. They have no means to do so and occupy America. They have no means to invade and occupy America. And they have no benefit in invading and occupying America. So you're 0 for 2. And to try to justify military spending and military power by that means is just utterly stupid. It's like this whole argument of Russian interference with U.S. elections. Okay, listen, if Russia can influence American elections by buying Facebook ads. We are.
we deserve it.
Yeah, we deserve it. Yeah, that's the whole thing.
Someone pointed out the potential. We spend more money on defense than the next 26 nations combined, 25 of which are our allies.
Well, yeah, and beyond that, though, if you look at what we spend in intelligence, spying, and the military, it's larger than the entire world combined.
Yeah. It's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. So, now that we understand that Torah means guidance and teaching and instruction and direction, and that it's a textbook in and of itself visually and etymologically, let's see what Yahweh said next in his, this would be Shemoth names, Exodus 4:13. It's just amazing, too, that Yahweh named the book Shemoth names.
Because
it's not just his name. He has but one name, and he's introducing his name, but he's also introducing some extraordinarily important individuals to us. You know, he's introducing in this book Moshe to us, and the importance of this person that draws us out and away from the oppression that is caused by militaries and patriotism and politics and economic schemes and religious schemes. He's this first person he's introducing us to in Shemoth is an extraordinarily important name, and the second name that he introduces us to, Aaron, is also a very important name. So, it is important. Now, this next statement in Shemoth, Exodus 4:13, is not necessarily comprehensible. There's a lot of stuff in it that just reveals that Moshe was not an effective communicator. And that he didn't understand at all what was being asked of him. He said, so then he said, this is Moshe, he conveyed, pleading, this is the calling, imperfect. With your permission, I recognize that I'm responding to a superior being's instructions, politely as I can, express this after considering what has just been said. While the guidance is appreciated, considering the implications, and then it's, Edonai. Edonai, in this case, right, could be Adonai, my Lord, or it could be my upright one. In this particular case, I can see Moshe, who has no idea who Yahweh is.
No.
I can see him saying, listen, you know, the typical, okay, this is God, he's the Lord, he doesn't know him yet, we haven't had any Torah teaching yet, and he could have used the term inadvisedly. But because keep in mind, he's already told Yahweh, no, I don't want to do this. And so, is it capable? Is he therefore capable of using the wrong term at this point? As someone who has just told God, no, I don't want to help you free the children of Israel from religious and political corruption. So, is it possible? Absolutely. Inadvisable? Absolutely. But we're talking about a wrong response. So, it's in that case, we should expect an errant title. You know, God is not trying to make Moshe look like the bastion of enlightenment here. Moshe has made a really bad choice. And so his vocabulary should reflect that choice. So then he said, with your permission, my Lord, you choose to send, please, by hand, you reaching out. All right. That does not flow very well. But he's begging it. He says, you, of your own volition, you should dispatch. Please, I'm pleading with you, by your hand, reaching out. In other words, dispatch the children of Israel yourself.
Yeah.
That's what he's saying. You know, dispatch them yourself. I mean, he's not clearly communicating. He's stammering here. But by your own hand, do this. Well, could Yahweh do that?
Sure, good.
Good.
I don't think so. Let me tell you, I don't think he could because it's contrary.
Give up free will?
Well, it's not just free will. Is that the entire purpose of life on this planet, of human beings. The entire purpose of the Torah, the entire purpose of the covenant, the entire purpose of Yahweh, with the entire conception of the universe and life within it, is to form a relationship with humanity. To build this family and to have this great adventure together. And so if Yahweh is going in there, and if Yahweh be Egypt, Mitzrayim, oh, come on. That's not the way it works.
Yeah, no contest.
Right. It's not the way it works. Do you think that Yahweh could have conveyed the covenant to us in a way other than through this discussion with Abraham? Well, yes, but it's not the way it works. So he couldn't. Not in be true to his nature. So was it possible, technically, but not possible because it would be contrary to his nature to convey the covenant except through this individual Abraham. It would not have been Yahweh's nature to save a family from the flood unless you understand the nature of that family, who the leader of that family was, and why that family was spared. So it was with Noah. And now this is with Moshe. So I don't think it's not consistent with Yahweh's nature. So while he has the power to do it, it's not in his character to do it. He does everything through individuals. That's the prime directive. Right. So technically, could he? Yeah, I suppose. But I don't think he could. Really? Yeah, because it's not in his nature. It would be opposed to his character. It's an opposition to the prime directive. His stated purpose.
It does change the filter, too. You know, where he filters the people who will actually join his family.
Mm-hmm.
I think about that a lot. He just cannot make it easy. Otherwise,
no, you're right.
We just have to offer everything to a higher level, to a different.
Right.
To a different.
Yeah, if he went into Mitzrayim and just torched the government and annihilated all the people, and there was no lesson there, and then the people walked out. What would we learn about the nature of human religious and political schemes? And what would we learn about the children who are the model that Yahweh is using for what works when you trust him and rely upon him and follow him, and what doesn't work when you're in opposition to him? And you don't listen to him. You wouldn't have the story and the teaching of Yisrael. So
the thing about Yahweh is the best teacher. He knows what works for teaching us these things. And those examples are what works.
If you look at the Torah itself, what book did Yahusha cite from the most of the five books of the Torah?
Devarim, maybe?
That is correct, Devarim. And the reason for that is that the first four books, Yahweh is communicating to us through Moshe. And Devarim, you've got Moshe, the individual that Yah has chosen to work with, explaining how the Torah, this teaching, works in our lives, what the priorities are, how we apply it, which is the very nature of his, the way that he operates. So that's the reason why I think he says, Moshe says, you do this. You do this on your own. You're God. You don't need me. I'm the wrong person to do this. And so Yahweh's response is heartbreaking. I think it's in the top four or five most haunting and tormenting statements in the entire Torah prophets itself. So my worst may be when Yeshayah appears and Shamahim with Yahweh, and Yahweh opens the door and there's no one there. Yeah, that's heartbreaking. I mean, this is heartbreaking. So this is Shemot, Exodus 4:14. Then indeed, surely, because of this, Yahweh was displeased. He was disappointed and exasperated. He was unhappy, annoyed, and grieved, vexed, deeply concerned and agitated, even a bit angry and incensed with Moshe. So he says, what about Aaron, your brother, Eloi? I actually know that indeed he speaks incessantly, making words come alive. So this is Yahweh who just explained to Moshe, you're worried about your tongue in your mouth and being unresponsive. Didn't I make the human mouth? Don't you think I can work through yours? And Yahweh chose this man because this man was the most qualified to do this mission. Yahweh didn't have to teach him the horror of human religion and politics. He already knew it firsthand. Yahweh could spend all of his time talking about the positive nature of his Torah. And when Yahweh then would go into the problems with human political and religious schemes, that his teaching resonated with Moshe because Moshe was part of it. He knew it. He had left it. So Yahweh was disappointed. He was exasperated. This is completely flies in the face of God wants to, you know, loves everyone. No, he was disappointed. When you recognize
that he was Jaro and Alf, his anger and burning anger. He was really upset.
The burning anger. Yeah, he was really upset. And can you imagine though being the creator of the universe and saying, "I want to perform the single most important deed in human history through you. I not only want to liberate my people and explain that my Torah is about liberation, about freedom. I not only want to explain that I want to take them away from religion and politics and militarism and economic schemes and into this promised land. And I'm going to do it through my Moed Mikra. But then I'm going to reveal my ways through you in the process." And you're telling me
on the grandest stage.
On the grandest stage. You're going to become perhaps the most important person in human history. Because of what I want to do through you. And you're telling me no? Devastating. What about Aaron? Aaron, what
but
a powerful
notice
term.
Yahweh didn't strike down him. He didn't, reject him. He worked with him.
Oh.
God who's looking for any ways to kick you out.
Right.
This is a God who's willing to work with you.
Right. He toned it down. He offered Moshe the keys to Shamayim, to the spiritual realm. He offered Moshe the single greatest mission in human history. Moshe turned it down, working directly with Yahweh. And so Yahweh said, okay, you know, let me dumb it down for you. How about your brother goes along with you? Yeah, he's a really, really, really eloquent speaker. He talks about talking. He makes things happen by articulating a great many powerful words. He habitually conveys the most words so he can communicate the words. God says, okay, I'll make it really not bad for you. Moshe will speak for you. How about that? Let's get going here. I'll dumb it down for you. And that's sometimes how we need to start. I offered you something that was extraordinary, but let's make it mundane for you until we really connect here. And here you've got Moshe, meaning one who draws out from Mashah to draw out. And Aaron, one who brings enlightened free will regarding an alternate relationship, clearly desiring the home comprised of love and light, which empowers. It's a compound of Ahal, to be clear about the home, and shining brightly, Ahav, to love, Allah, to desire the sign and mark, O, to choose to prefer between contrasting ideas, which serves as a marker of an alternative and conflicting relationship, Own, which is vigorous ability through empowerment, and or light and enlightenment. You bring all those concepts together, you've got informed free will. All right, I'm going to create. Your brother was named informed free will. He'll speak for you. I really know. Yeah, I am genuinely aware of the fact. I'm cognizant and literally realize that at least temporarily, called perfect, that indeed he speaks his definite, making words come alive. Isn't that just a marvelous way for I would say, all right,
that's true.
having this conversation.
Here's the plan dumbed down for you. I'm going to give you the plan full fire hose, but right now for you, I'm going to dumb it down for you. Okay? Now just think of the implications. Yahweh introduced himself by title and by name to Moshe on Mount Horeb. God told him that he wanted his assistance leading his people away from religious, governmental, and economic servitude. Here, God said that he would teach him, guide him, and walk with him every step of the way. Then Yah proved his divinity through symbols and prophecy. But in the face of all this, Moshe said, no, choose someone else. And he got him disappointed, exasperated. So I asked, how does this differ from Yahweh introducing himself to us by title and name in his Torah on the same mountain, with him asking us to walk away from oppressive human institutions, with him, from him promising to teach, guide, and accompany us, from him proving his divinity with symbols and prophecy, when we don't listen to him and say no? How is it any different? So when the religious reject his offer and refer to him as the Lord, wouldn't it be entirely reasonable to expect that Yahweh would be annoyed and offended?
Or at least corrected him right away, you know. But he didn't. I mean, he could have jumped all over him, but he carried on the conversation.
But it is clear that this bothered Yahweh. It made him angry.
Oh, yeah.
And so when he does all of this for us, humankind, in his Torah, everything he did for Moshe and more, and 99.999% of humanity say, no thanks. You go do it by yourself. And God would be annoyed with humanity, wouldn't he?
Well, every time we go through passages like this, I don't know about you, James, and Craig, I know it doesn't stop me from having conversations, but I don't have high hopes. Because it's just, the numbers just aren't there. Yahweh, I mean, 99.999% is really accurate. You know, of the billions of people, on people who just turned down the offer. And it's,
yes.
It doesn't discount me like it used to. It's just reality.
Yeah, I think that's why I'm my search for a partner in life going forward that is at least interested in knowing what Yahweh has to say and wants to think about it and discuss it is so high on my priority moving forward, and it is so rare just to find somebody who's interested in discussing, open-minded
enough to have a discussion with you
about the fate of their soul, about life of lived with liberty and freedom, of enlightenment and empowerment and enrichment, total confidence, perfection and immortality. All of that's what Yahweh is offering everyone to discuss it. Getting to know the creator of the universe as he really is, don't even want to discuss it. Well, it didn't make Yahweh very happy when Moshe said no. But he didn't give up on it. And I think that's should be comforting to us in a way. It's horrifying in how readily and easily most of us disappoint Yahweh. But it's also comforting that Yahweh is not expecting us to be perfect. So long as we show any indication, any inclination to follow him, to trust him, to rely on him, to do and respond as he has directed and guided, he'll take it from there.
Yeah, I like the four things.
When I started, okay. I think you guys all were.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, it resonated with me. Terry got it first. I mean, you know, she had the stuff and put it in my lap or told me to listen to this, and then when she printed stuff. But I'll have to say for both of us, I mean, it resonated with us right. You know, it didn't take very long before you saying, yeah, that's right, and I know that's right, and I know that's right, and if that's right, then I'm really confused on that matter because that ain't what I thought, and on. But after you could check off the little box of that one and say, nope, and then you can do the research,
yeah.
And there it is. You know, but
there it is.
With due respect, it was...
Yeah, it's so easy to verify this. That's why you know, I have so many people that I'll start this with and say, you know, you can believe whatever you want. I don't care what people believe. You know, I'll respect what everybody believes. And you can believe whatever you want. But this one, I believe it. And he goes, no, no, no. I don't believe anything. Yeah. I know.
Prove it to yourself.
And you can know. And you can know. Don't trust me. Don't believe me. Read it. Study it. The evidence is there. It is convincing. It is powerful. It's enlightening. It's enriching. It's all there. It's verifiable. He gave us everything we needed and much more, so long as we're open-minded and observant, willing to closely examine and carefully consider what he has to say. It's all there. And everything he says reinforces it, right down to the nuances of the letters themselves that comprise these important words. You know, a name like Moshe, to draw out. Draw out from where? Mitzrayim, the crucible of human oppression. Marvelous. What a great name. To draw away from religion and politics is what that means.
Would he have not have known what his name was?
I don't even know. You know, the theory is that he was just called Moshe because he was drawn out of the Nile.
Of the water out of the Nile, yeah.
He was drawn out of the Nile. But that's not why Yahweh chose the name Moshe for him, because it's not about him being drawn out of the Nile. It's being him being drawn out, and he's drawing us out of political and religious oppression. And then to have the name Aaron, okay, we'll speak through a person who's been named and enlightened free will.
That's pretty good.
He makes words come alive.
Mm-hmm.
Names are so very important. They communicate, convey such astonishing meaning. So if it's all right, gentlemen, my cough and my voice are getting out on me. I'm going to call it a night. I appreciate you all listening. I'm sorry for the personal intrusion in the beginning of the program, but I did want you to know why I'm not as responsive as I had been in the past. And I do come to you with a little bit of a heavy heart with the human aspects of life, although I remain as passionate and as enthused about Yahweh and his covenant as I have ever been. And so it is what I'm seeking in my life, not in terms of enhancing my relationship with Yahweh, which is every day. But it's I would certainly love to be in a position where it's similar to what you guys enjoy.
So, we're putting for you.
I thank you very much.
And
I'm
going to give
you a new from my voice completely. It goes out this evening. But thank you. Thank you all.
Good
night.
Good night. Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom.
Bye.